Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series four of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. Once again, Adam Walker is alongside me, so sit back, relax, and we'll take things from here. This week, I am joined by Danny Lieberman, CEO at Flask Data. Danny, I've given you a very brief introduction there, but look, I guess for those of you who have, or those of us who have not come across you, give us a quick intro as to what Flask Data is all about and what you folks are up to.
Sure. So Flask Data is an Israeli tech company. And we are a digital CRO. That means a digital contract research organization, which means that we provide the whole gamut of clinical data management in the cloud with an open cloud API. And that means that you can collect data, you can monitor the data, you can get real-time reports on the data, and basically self-service. So once you get started, you're pretty much independent, and our claim to fame is that one, we're very fast, so we've operationalized the whole way things are brought up to speed at the beginning of a study. And the second thing is that we like to say we're a digital CRO with zero CRO overheads, which means that if you would typically be paying a CRO, a traditional CRO, anywhere between 20 and 50% project management overheads, then with Flask Data, you pay zero.
Wow. Well, he's straight in there, Adam, with the, I guess, a few benefits. Certainly money talks, or certainly no money talks even louder sometimes, which is interesting. But look, I guess, Adam, as a resident biometrics expert, how does this then differ from kind of your traditional CRO? Have you seen this done before? I hadn't really seen too much of this when I reached out to Danny, but have you come across this too much?
To be honest, no. I mean, this is new and interesting. And as you say, Danny, it sounds like what you're offering is a platform. And classically, CROs, biometric CROs are offering the services associated with that. So data management, stats, statistical programming, medical writing. It opens up plenty of questions for me around, you know, how do you do these things? What expertise has led you to this particular position? But more importantly, I think, how do clients find you in the first instance? How do they come across you? Because certainly your company is new to me, and I've been working in this field for, you know, 25 odd years. So I could probably point a finger at many of your competitors, but I certainly am not familiar with your service.
Well, so first of all, we are relatively new. We actually launched a year before COVID started. And so COVID was both a blessing and a curse. It was initially it was a curse because we thought we were going to, you know, fold up the company. But it was also a blessing because it we got a few interesting projects, and that sort of gave us more velocity to grow. So customers find us. Right now, we do really three kinds of marketing. We do word of mouth marketing. So we're an Israeli company. So we started, so our first 10 customers were Israeli med tech companies. And from there, we did word of mouth marketing to the next 20. And then the second thing we do is we do content marketing. So we do a lot of work on LinkedIn. The third thing we do is probably the most important source of leads for us, is we do cold outreach. So we actually do cold calls to particular verticals that we think are interesting for us. Over time, we've, I think, tweaked the kind of verticals, the kind of areas in clinical trials that we do best at. And we do best at really, I think, this is going to sound horrible, I think, but we do best when customers have failed before they came to us. And our three biggest customers failed miserably. They're phase one. And they came to us actually from biometrics partners' referrals. And that, to answer the question, which is probably lurking at the back of your mind, is that we don't actually do the biometrics. We actually provide an interface, both an API and a series of very easy to run what we call real-time data management tools, which means that the statisticians that work with us can actually very easily set up a schedule to get a get an ODM XML job ready to go, or CSV or XO, whatever they like. We even had someone who asked for SPSS, and we do that also. So we're pretty agile at providing things in a biometrics friendly kind of way. And because we actually stop short of the statistical analysis, we're actually easy to work with from a biometric standpoint. We don't tread on that turf at all. So we do everything from the data management plan all the way up to, but not including statistical analysis. That is not our forte. We are not statisticians. We don't pretend to know anything about that worth noting. And that's a model that works well, because it means that we can partner our first customers. And this is actually another way of looking at it. A lot of our customers came to us from biometrics companies. So they appreciated the ease of use. So a lot of the pain that you probably know about biometrics, about data preparation and date formats being, being a nightmare and things like that. So we've been able to make some of that pain go away for our biometrics partners. And I think that they appreciated it enough to bring us repeat business. So that's basically it. To summarize, the answer is we do word of mouth, we do channel marketing with biometrics, we do content marketing, and we do direct outreach.
I like it, Danny. And it's all very interesting. Like there's already a few spin-off questions are whirling in my brain here. But before I go on to those, because I mean, as you may be aware, I recruit into the clinical operations and PM space. Before I go down that route, I'm just interested to know a bit more about, say, your background, how you got into the industry and how you got to this point that, you founded this company. So, I mean, how did you get into the industry to start with? To take us way back.
Way back. Yeah. Way back. Like, 5 years ago. Okay. So I'm an outsider. I am not a clinical trials industry veteran, like they like to say. I had been working for an American cybersecurity company called Fidelis Security. So when Fidelis was sold to General Dynamics about 7 years ago, they told me, go find your next opportunity, man. And so I said, okay. And I ended up consulting to medical device companies in Israel for cybersecurity and privacy compliance. And before I knew it, within a year or two, I had done 30 projects. And if I knew what was good for me, I would have stayed in that space. really, truly. So I had all kinds of, actually some of them are still customers of ours.
Yeah.
And one customer we had was a customer doing a what's called a 510K for a medical device submission. I was involved with them on the technical side, and I knew nothing about clinical trials. But I just happened to hear them talking about how much time they were taking to clean the data. And I said, wait a minute, well, that's interesting. What are you doing cleaning the data? And they said, well, we have a lot of data. I said, what does that mean, you have a lot of data? I said, we have 120 patients at 10 sites. I said, okay, how many data points do you have for each patient? They said, we have about 1,000. So I said, let me get this straight. So you have 120,000 data points, right? And they said, yeah, that's a lot of data. I said, no, guys, that is not a lot of data. I will tell you what a lot of data is. A lot of data is my telecom customers in Central Europe, like Polkomtel in Poland, that has 20 million mobile subscribers and 100,000 cyber events a day on their network. and being able to filter out the top 10 from 100,000 cyber events and then produce actionable intelligence to go out and dump into a dumpster or go run over to someone and beat the crap out of them and understand what's happening, that is a lot of data. So 100,000 cyber events a day is a lot of data.
Mm.
Okay, 120,000 data points over a 9-month trial. What are you guys talking about? I don't understand. So they said, no, you don't understand. This is a lot of data. I said, that's right. That's my problem. I don't understand. And that's how the whole thing got started. So I said, well, I've been in the tech space for a few years, and I didn't found Fidelis, but I was very friendly with the founder, and he brought me on to take care of EMEA, Europe, Middle East, and Africa for him. And so I contacted a couple of friends and who are in the industry, and I said, what do you guys think about a cloud platform to automatically monitor GCP compliance? GCP is good clinical practice, okay? Mm-hmm. And GCP means three things. Now I can give the lecture, right? So it means patient safety, it means protocol compliance, and it means data quality. So I said, guys, and this was two very, really, really smart people. But one of them, by the way, a PhD in biometrics, yeah? And the other one is a PhD in neuroscience, I think. And I said, guys, what do you think about the idea of automating GCP monitoring and slashing this 6 months of cleaning data, which is nonsense, to a week or maybe an hour? I said, that's a phenomenal idea. Let's go talk to people. So we spent the summer of that year going around talking to people because I had connections. I knew absolutely no one.
Mm.
So we talked to a couple CROs. We talked to some sponsors, drug sponsors, device sponsors. And the answer was that this is a phenomenal idea, except for one thing. And we said, except for what? And the customers always said, we need a cheap way to collect the data. So we need a cheap EDC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because Medidata and some of the other big names, you know, are charging a lot of money for data collection.
Uh-huh.
And that really resonated with me because by that time, you know, we knew about Google and Facebook, where basically they collect data for free, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking in my mind that as the tech world gets, you know, better and faster with applications, eventually EDC would be free because there's no value in collecting data. The value is what you do in biometrics. That's a lot of value. The value is being able to monitor for GCP violations and do it on time, not wait until 3 months later, which is what a lot of companies were doing at the time. Now they're a little bit faster. Now they do it only a month later, right? So the customer said, look, guys, this is a great idea, but give us a cheap EDC and we'll get on board. And as you guys develop out the platform, we're happy to, try it out and see if it works.
Mm.
So that's what we did.
Who were these customers? I mean, you mentioned customers. What type of organization are we talking about here? Are we talking sponsors, pharma companies, biotechs, or a range?
Our first customers were med tech sponsors.
Uh-huh.
Some companies doing medical device diagnostics, or one was like an implantable.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was like a woman's health product.
Sure. No, I was just keen. Yeah, just interested to know kind of when you're saying customers. Yeah, who we're talking about here? But no, perfect.
Sponsors, right? So because we were talking all the time with CROs, and CROs are part of our market research that summer, and the CROs said, yeah, it's a great idea, but the market is definitely not ready for you. with automating GCP monitoring. And I tried to understand why, and they tried to explain to me why. And then they used words like SDV and things like that, which again, I said, I don't understand why you have to compare pieces of paper with an electronic record and you call that monitoring. And they said, you don't understand. I said, well, you know, we're back to the I don't understand place, right? Because that made absolutely no sense to me. And a lot of people still do SDV, okay? So that's like, yeah, really, they do. A lot of people still do 100% SDV. I mean, the smarter people do like SDR, they call it now, source document, what's it called, review, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes more sense. Okay, but you know something? There was a huge, huge study done by Medidata like 5 years ago. They examined 14,000 trials and they found that SDV of any kind only had impact on 3% of the data points. By that time, we had done like 5 or maybe 10 trials and we had some data of our own. And we saw that in the medtech world, it was influencing maybe 2% of the data points. So we said, guys, you know, from a business perspective, forget about, you know, what you do, saving lives, okay? You know, let's put all that aside, okay? From a business perspective, if I told you that you were running a supermarket, okay, and you were spending, and 50% of your expenses were people looking at cameras, okay, security cameras, and writing down things on pieces of paper, and then a month later, summarizing what they saw on the security cam, and that was 50%, of your total expenses, right? Not just your security expense, your total budget for running supermarket was people writing down stuff on pieces of paper. Then, and you saw that only reduced theft by like 3%, right? If I were the general manager of the supermarket, I would say, guys, no, that's a bad idea. Stop doing that. There's no value add in doing anything in any business that contributes less than 3% to improving quality or safety or security or whatever it is, okay, or sales. Okay. So I started telling customers, and my co-founder started telling me, stop saying that, because she said it's very so my co-founder was a medical scientist, okay, doing Duchenne research. So she said, stop telling that to people. But I would go around telling people, said, SDV is a terrible idea. You should just stop doing it and just stop doing it because it doesn't make any economic sense. And he said, Danny, you can't tell that to people. You can't tell them that they're stupid, okay? No, I'm not. I said, I'm not telling them they're stupid. I'm telling them that they should just axe this non-value add activity and stop talking about it. Just move on to more important things like patient safety, okay? Move on to more important things like making sure your data is high quality and then making sure that your data model is correct so that your biometrics person down the line can do something with the data. And then we started seeing that a lot of the biometrics people were saying, you know, the data model I'm getting is really all fucked up and I can't work with it, or it's hard for me to work with it. So We said, wait a minute, we need to look at how this thing works closer. So we started thinking about the process and operationalizing the process in a more, you know, rigid kind of way. And basically we're telling customers now, we have a whole process for doing this, and said, if you want to get into our process, get into the box with us, that's great. It's going to work for you. And if you don't, then I don't think you're a good fit for us. So, you know, that's where we are right now. And we've had some phenomenal success. We did a big rescue study from a drug company in the US that failed with one of the top three CROs.
Wow, incredible stuff. Well, Adam, yeah. I saw that you had...
The bottom line of that is that we rescued them in 2.5 weeks.
Wow. Well, perhaps coming on to how that was done and the impact of that and kind of where that sits in terms of, yeah, your successes that you've had since starting. But Adam, it looks as though you were eager to pitch in with a question as Danny was talking away there.
As you're describing it, Danny, thank you, James. As you're describing it, Danny, you are the antithesis to that standard clinical trial methodology that has been so ingrained into everyone that works in this industry. This is the point, isn't it? And you're looking in from the outside saying, this makes no sense. This is rubbish. And you're challenging that status quo, namely the old way. We always talk about the old way, right? And you're all about the new way. And what if what if you did this and what if you did that? And I think your analogy is absolutely brilliant, because we need more people looking in from the outside who are challenging the old way. Because I tell you what, it is the most conservative industry, and we just do things the same way, and systems are built in the same way, as you mentioned, Medidata, numerous other systems that just reinforce that same old, don't challenge the status quo, and are based around 20-year-old approaches to paper, effectively, which is, you know, exactly to your example of SDV. It just resonated. So it resonates so loudly to me, because, you know, I would like to say I'm not the old way, but I know the old way and I've understood it, because that was the way I was brought up in this industry as well. So I really understand exactly where you're coming from as a fresh pair of eyes going, this makes no sense at all, guys. This is rubbish.
Amazing. We hear it quite a bit, don't we, Adam, where people are almost just, you know, they're frustrated with how things are going, and then they've come up with solutions, and that it's you know, that challenge.
Why, isn't it? You know, yeah. Why, so what, why, tell me why, and then so what?
and clearly Danny's mastered that to the point where his business partner has even said to, you know, you need to zip it a little bit, but clearly that is not going to happen, Danny, by the sound of things. But look, talk to us then about this this rescue study. So you've come in, pharma company, you're trying to turn things around, and you managed to do that in sort of 2.5 weeks. Where do you think that problem lied? And, you know, would you say that, you know, since you started, that that's been one of the biggest successes? Or, you know, how would you rate, you know, how things are going for you as a business right now?
So certainly that was one of our biggest successes. And it was a U.S. biotech that we had been running after for 2 years. Mm. And one of my salespeople had just, I think she found them on LinkedIn and she connected, and we just started this process of pulling them into the into the sales process. But early in November last year, we made a routine follow-up call to the chief operations officer of this biotech. And he said, you know, I might have something for you. He said, hang on. So he called me back the next day and said, look, we are terminating our CRO. It later turned out that the CRO was one of the top three. So you can guess which one it was. And we later also understood why, but that was a kind of out of a process of induction. Mm-hmm. And not that they told us, it was not our place to ask. And so I said, okay, you are terminating your CRO in the middle of a phase 2B, okay? Not pleasant. And I said, okay, send us a dump of the data from the RAVE system with the RAVE metadata. Mm-hmm. And the next day we showed them a casebook in our system. And they were like, whoa, how did you do that? So, you know, we have data scientists on the team. And so one of our data scientists wrote some Python code to actually parse the metadata RAVE export and pump it into our internal format for creating CRFs. And like, you know, half a day later, we had a complete ECRF for their study. Wow. And we pushed the button, created casebook. So we pushed the button, sent them the casebook. So like they called us up on a Wednesday, then on the Thursday afternoon, on a Thursday afternoon, they had sent Thursday morning our time, they sent us the metadata RAVE mm-hmm. export. By Thursday afternoon, American time, we had sent them the casebook. And on Friday, they sent us a PO.
Wow.
I'm not surprised they were impressed, because, you know, to bring this to your attention, James, this is, you know, this is extraordinary timing. you know, the turnaround is amazing. If you were to do that from scratch, it would take, in most systems, several weeks to do that. Never mind to extract a data set and put it into another ECRF from scratch and build that all up with, you know, even if you had 10 people working around the clock, normally it would be challenging to have done it in that time scale. So clearly you're doing some really smart stuff there, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle to load up my email some days. So yeah, to hear that what you're doing in such a short period of time is just insane. So look, that's clearly been one of the biggest successes. And as you kind of rightly pointed out, I think when you're trying to win new business, it's normally because there's a problem and you've got a solution. And that's, you know, what's happened here. On that same kind of subject then, would you say that situation has also been the biggest challenge for you as a business, is getting people to change their mindset to how it's been done to what you're doing? Because unless you're kind of, let's put it, you know, bluntly, in the shit, people have a reluctance to that change. So how have you dealt with that?
So you are correct that this is a challenge for us. Our successes have been with either companies that failed first, their phase one. Mm-hmm. And because we got to them at the right time, we won the contract. Or this case, we have actually had not been successful with, I would say, call it biotechs, growth stage biotechs maybe even, mm-hmm. who are, the management came out of the old style biopharma. And, you know, the pitch would go something like this. We said, you know, this is what we do. We're a digital CRO. We have a platform where you can collect and automate detection and get real-time data management reports mm-hmm. of as many as you want. We'll design the system for you in 3 working days and commit to delivering it to you in 2 working weeks. And then once it's up and running, you can have as many real-time data management tools as you want. So, and they said, well, what does that mean? That means that you tell us what you need. Like, say you want a safety report, and any kind of safety assessment and any drug study will be different. Even for the same indication, and it will be different. The same drug, it'll be different. So safety is a classic, data quality is a classic, site performance, site accruals are a classic. So we say, look, you know, instead of haggling with us about, you know, how many hours we'll bill you to send you reports, we'll say, we'll give you as much as you want. So eat as much as you want. It's like, it's not a la carte anymore. It's just one of these restaurants, you know, where you go in and you pay mm-hmm. a fixed price and you pay, I don't know how much it costs in New York.
In London, normally it's far too much. Everything is in London, but I get the concept.
Yeah, so you guys say, you know, give me 50 euro, and you can have everything in the buffet, right?
Yeah,
and that might sound like a great deal to you, because if you would be buying a la carte, we might end up paying 120 for yourself and your wife, right? So we said, there's no a la carte. You said, part of the deal is you tell us. And so we do that because it's kind of like a bet, but we know that it's just like, you can't eat too much. You know, the people have big eyes, but you can't eat as much as your eyes see. And we know that real-time tools are addictive. And we know that the average study doesn't need more than 5 or 6. And we have our best customer right now is a drug company, another drug company. They started with 13 because they were amazingly figuring everything out about patient compliance, you know, and drug accountability. Thank you. Yeah. And they had everything figured out, you know, and so we had like 13 tools. And then when they did another trial, we have accounting in the system, so we know how often they use each tool, right? So we saw that one tool was being used.
Right.
And that tool was being used big time. That was like their everything but the kitchen sink tool. I mean, everything they wanted to know, it was like a patient profile tool. So they use this patient profile tool. It's like, and they can click a button, get it in Excel and CSV and PDF, whatever they want. So that was their workhorse tool. And we noticed that by the end of the trial, they had not used any of the other tools after the first month of the study.
Yeah.
So the next study we did, they said, yeah, give us all the 13 tools. You know, that's part of the deal, right? And I said, no problem. You get all the 13 tools. But we did something nasty. We said, we just installed that one tool. And we wanted to see how quickly they would catch on that they didn't have the other dozen.
Did they?
No, they did eventually. They caught on after 2 months. After 2 months, one of my customer support team gets a phone call, and she's saying, you know, Danny, the project manager, the clinical project manager from this customer is really angry at us because she's missing a dozen tools. Those tools are not in the system anymore. And they used to be in the previous trial, weren't they? And so I said, call her back and say, you are absolutely right. Our bad for not installing those tools in the new trial. So we put them back in the system. And of course they continued not to use them, but you know, at least they had that security blanket. You know, they knew that we were not ignoring them. It was more about us not being respectful. But no, seriously, that tool, by the way, they're doing their seventh study with us in their pipeline. And that one tool that, you know, kind of like this patient profile tool continues to be their workhorse.
Yeah.
And over time it's gotten better and better. And if there are any bugs in that tool, you can be sure they're going to call us up in the middle of the night and pound on the table. But that's the great thing about real time, because in real time, when you have a problem, you can figure it out. It's easy. You know, they'll call up and say, you know, patient profile tool, that patient yesterday, he didn't take the drug when the tool said it did. And I know because they're using a connected drug dispenser. Okay. So they know when the patient took it, but so it's easy enough to figure things out because real time is a lot easier to do than SDB.
Wow. And look, Danny, I guess in terms of how things are going, look, you know, clearly you're having some fun with it as well. You're picking up clients despite the, you know, adversity in terms of, you know, that kind of old ways of thinking, I guess. You know, you're breaking down people's, you know, paradigms, which is always going to be a tough gig. How does Flask Data look now? I guess, look, the other thing I should ask is where did the name first come from? And look, what does the business look like now? You know, are you working remotely? Are you, you know, how big's the team now that is, you know, winning, you know, some fairly dynamic business?
The name came actually from our UX designer. And when we first started the company, one of my co-founders had this idea to call it Clear Clinica, which is actually a pretty cool name for a company that wants to automate GCP monitoring. But after a while, it was like, it's going to sound really stupid. It's going to sound really, really, really stupid. But the logo for Clear Clinica is very long. You have to write Clear Clinica. And then when we were doing like major product work on our clinical trial management system. So we have like a system that manages all the moving pieces in the system. Mm. The UX designer was saying, you know, you need to change the name of the company. I said, why? He said, because the logo is too big.
Too many letters.
Too many letters, right. And he said, and you know, he's a UX designer. You know, he's like an Apple guy, right? You know, he said, look at the Apple website. I said, yeah, I have a MacBook. I have an iPad. You know, I'm an Apple guy, right? So he said, look at the Apple website. Look at the Apple logo. It's just this little Apple. I said, you guys need a little logo the size of the Apple. And I said, okay, you know, I think out of the box every day, right? So give me an idea. He said, let me think about it. So it came back the next day. The next day he said, you know, I think what you guys do, which is basically collecting data from patients, devices, and investigators and site coordinators, is basically that's like putting everything into a flask, you know, like a whiskey flask, right? Mm-hmm. Or an Erlenmeyer if you're a lab guy. Yeah. And and you're collecting data, you're putting it in the Flask, and that's it. I'm going to call the company. He said, I'm going to call your company Flask Data from now on. And I said, okay, how much will it cost me to design a logo? So he gave me a number. I said, that works for me. So he and a logo person that works with them designed the logo, and that's it. That's the story of how we came to be called Flask Data.
Wow.
Which is an incredibly stupid story, but it's maybe.
I don't understand. Like, from one, it almost seems from one extreme to the other that you've got this incredible ability to spot a solution and come up with this all singing, all dancing platform that can do stuff that others have failed at and churn it out within a couple of days, couple of weeks, etc. And then in terms of the company name, you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, that will do. So Danny, I mean, clearly you've got a few attributes to yourself as an individual. You know, have you perhaps, you know, where have you drawn these attributes from over the years? Has there been any particular mentors or kind of people that have influenced you to kind of give you the characteristics and the makeup that you are, that you've got now? Because you're quite a character, I've got to say. In a nice way, I'm just going to add that, in a very nice way, Danny.
Well, you had one unanswered question, how many people? So we're 8 people and we work remote. We have offices in Modiin. So we have half of the team works in Modiin, the other half of the team work remote. Even the people that live 5 minutes from the office work remote because they, you know, one of my project managers lives 5 minutes from the office. She comes into the office whenever she feels like. We were a remote first company when we started, and then we signed a lease in the shared office space January 2020, which was perfect timing. That's the company. We have people that work with us in India and in Europe as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have biometrics partners in the US and in Cyprus and in Israel. So we're actually an extended team of probably a lot more than 8 people. You know, my own personal background is I was trained as a physicist, and I worked for some big companies. And at one point in time, I thought I wanted to cross over to the dark side and learn marketing. So I left. I was working for Intel at the time, so I left Intel to work for an Israeli telecommunications group.
Mm.
So I started a software distribution company for them. And that, you know, I learned a lot about selling and distribution. And that sort of like, you know, from there, I just sort of like went on. And so my background is varied. So I've been a professional software engineer for a long time. And I've done many different applications. So I have a good feel for different things. But because I spent 7 years in the sales, specifically in channel marketing, channel distribution.
Yeah.
I have a very good understanding. When I went after 7 years at Rod Binat, I realized that I could probably manage a distribution company for children's shoes. It didn't make any difference if it's software or children's shoes or you know, I don't know, kitchen utensils, whatever. It didn't make any difference. It's just boxes and it's 2 or 3 tier distribution. So that sort of gave me a very good foundation. It was a tremendous learning experience to learn how to sell and to work with the channel. You know, and from then on, after then, I moved to, I worked for the cybersecurity company. And then from there, you know, the rest is history. They got sold. They told me, go get a life, go find something good to do with your life because you're not going to work for us anymore.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Well, it seems like you've certainly done it, Danny. So look, well, I guess it leads me on. I mean, what's next for you, for Flask Data? What are the plans?
So the plans for Flask Data are to really refine our value proposition and to really operationalize everything we've learned until now and to a point where a customer in a particular situation will have a playbook, and he and us will know, or she will know what to do. Truth be told, I don't know that there's any unique technology in this space. It's basically data collection, monitoring, response, and biometrics. I don't know that there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of talk about a lot of work being done with decentralized trials. I mean, we've been doing decentralized trials from day one, really. It's just that we didn't know it was called decentralized trials.
Yeah.
Decentralized, I'm looking at the work that a lot of the decentralized companies are doing, and I'm saying, well, you know, it's a mobile app. And you have a nice mobile app, or the other guy has a less nice mobile app, or the other guy has a nicer mobile app. And a lot of these companies have amazing marketing collateral, amazing collateral. If you look at a company like Medible, they've raised a lot of money. They do tremendous work. I really admire them. Michelle Longmire is an amazing CEO. She's a great leader. But when you boil it down, mind you, see, I'm coming from the hardcore tech world, okay? I'm coming from, you know, cybersecurity and chips and places like that. And I'm looking at the work that Medible is doing, not to mention Medidata. And I'm saying, but I don't see, you know, a huge technology leap here. I see some really nice applications. I see amazing marketing collateral. You know, if you look at the Medidata website, they're obviously the world's champs in marketing. There's no question about it. And I take my hat off to Medidata. They're the 500-pound gorilla of the EDC space. So they're obviously, they're doing a good job at what they do. So I would say, in a way, I'm kind of jealous of them for being such good marketers. Mm. So where we are right now is basically to operationalize what we're doing and do more and better. From a personal perspective, I'm working on the next thing. And the next thing will be, how can I say? The next thing will basically be the tech guys call it data observability, but that's kind of like a buzzword. So I don't know if I like buzzwords, but basically it's going to be a platform that will let you point and shoot at any clinical data set.
Wow. Will be interesting to see that pan out. Adam, it's seems like as though you've got something to add there.
Yeah, I was also going to ask you, Danny, you know, from the inside out, there's something that I think is low-hanging fruit, and I don't know whether anyone else has mentioned this to you, but have you given any thought to electronic trial master files, for example, namely, you know, how we file the documents that are produced from these extended clinical trials across different phases, and, you know, the challenges that ensues with some of the existing providers that are out there?
That's an interesting question. I mean, people had asked us about this, and I really didn't have the management attention to look at it. So we have actually an alliance with the UK company that does this, and we've decided strategically that we're not going to invest. We will not invest in that. Mm-hmm. We have actually another strategic alliance with a company called Montreum, which does clinical ECTMF, ETMF, I think it's called. They're both great companies, this UK company and this, and they're, Canadian. And so their regional business manager lives in Israel. She's Jewish, you know, and so she lives about half an hour from us. So we get together for coffee and stuff. But so it's the kind of thing where you make a business decision not to go into, and because it's just maybe complementary to what you do, and better not to invest your business cycles and something that one or two other someone else's are already doing fairly well.
I was very curious because, you know, as you're describing the new way versus the old way, that is definitely something that is stuck in the dark ages. So, you know, I'm glad you have an affiliation or at least a partnership and you've given it some thought, because, you know, your smart guys, I'm sure, could sort that out very quickly if what you've told us about data generally and, you know, the real-time dashboards that you described plays out.
It's an interesting thought. I maybe, you know,
You've got him thinking now. maybe there'll be another.
I've lived and breathed it for too long, as I say.
To find out how much we've got his head spinning on that one.
And the time and effort that goes into that, and the reams and reams of people that are involved in that, and you know the body count around it is insane. I mean, genuinely insane, and it's completely consistent across CRO, pharma, biotech, without exception.
You've got really? To thinking far too much. Well, gents, before we end up getting into a whole different conversation, look, Danny, it's been great hearing all about you and your journey. Great storyteller. I've really enjoyed it. I've barely said a word, which has been fantastic. And look, to continue on that matter of me saying less, we like to close up the show with a quick fire questions round. So I'll kick us off here. And that is, what is the one piece of advice that you perhaps give to your younger self?
Don't be greedy.
and for our listeners, is there a book or resource that you would recommend that that you go back to time and time again?
Yes. One book I go back to a lot is called Extreme Ownership. You can Google it.
Which is Jocko Willink, isn't it? The ex-military. I'm not sure if it was a SEAL or something, but yeah, I've heard things about it.
Jocko's book. So Jocko's book, Jocko in Life, the book is phenomenal. But more than the book is phenomenal, the idea is phenomenal. The whole approach is phenomenal. And you don't have to be ex-military to appreciate it. They do it in a really very, very good way. The book brings stories from Iraq, but the bottom line is totally, totally applicable to business. And really, I think a lot of what I would say, you didn't ask me, you know, what are your biggest failures, but the biggest failures were I did not take extreme ownership of what I was doing. And I think the team right now, are the team's biggest successes are taking extreme ownership. The example of this biotech firing their top tier one CRO, and the entire team took leadership on this. Every person on the team took leadership. So we had like five people taking leadership points on this. No one ever stopped to say, oh, this is hard, or I don't understand the mission. The mission was clear to deliver within 3 weeks a working EDC to production. So the mission was clear. Everyone knew what they had to do. No one was shirking off. Every single person on the team took complete and extreme ownership of what they did. And that gave me personally just a lot of gratification, just thinking that, you know, that it worked well. So that's one book. That's one book I would recommend to your readers.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you.
Look, you covered a few things there about, you know, your team and spoke very highly of them. But, you know, what would you say are the top three qualities that you value most, Danny, when building your team at Floss Data?
Well, now I would say, without actually having known at the time, the first quality would be the ability to take extreme ownership, to take ownership, owning a situation, own it, fix it, get it done. That's the first thing. The second thing is the ability for a team member to learn new things. And I guess, you know, the final thing is, you know, to be humble, to be able to, you know, put your ego aside. It's hard for all of us, because we're tech guys, you know, but that's, you know, I think really important. So owning things, being inquisitive and wanting to learn, and checking your ego at the door.
I like it. All very good attributes to bring to the table.
Some great lessons there. You've talked a lot about work. What do you do? What's your favorite thing outside of work, Danny?
Yes. I'm a serious amateur biker, so I road bike. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a serious amateur musician. And I play in a big band, a big jazz band, a large jazz ensemble, 17 piece jazz ensemble.
What do you play?
I play the saxophone and clarinet.
Wow. Same as my sister.
Really?
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. And look, to close us off here, Danny. Look, we've talked a lot about your journey, about you, your views, what an amazing platform that you've put together. But look, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business?
I think the quality of what you, of your work, that's it, you know. Not necessarily the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You sold $10 million worth of product, but the quality of your work, whether it's in software or in biostatistics, or whether it's, you know, how well I play my saxophone, or how well I ride my bike. You know, I'm a data guy, so I'm like data driven. You know, I measure how many times, you know, forget it. I mean, it's insane. You know, I mean, if any of your listeners or you guys train, you know what it's like to have a, you know, to be an amateur athlete.
What gets tracked gets improved, Danny, is the way.
There's too much data. We become servants to our watches, you know, really, seriously.
Cool. Well, look, Danny, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, sharing your story. Look, I know that, I think, you know, even after conducting this podcast with you, there's still more questions that I want to ask and things. So look, for anyone else who wants to learn more about you, Fast Data, what's the best way to get a hold of you? How should people be reaching out?
Yeah, ping me and message me on LinkedIn. My phone number and email are on my LinkedIn profile, and it's
fantastic
easy.
Stuff.
If you message me, if you PM me on LinkedIn, I'll answer. I answer every message, even the 100 people a day that are trying to sell me online marketing services. I always say no, thank you.
Got back to you. I've got to say, I'll give you credit there. You got back to me and my partner very quickly when we've reached out. So look, if you're looking to get hold of Danny, connect with him on LinkedIn. We'll put his details, attached with the show here. But look, Danny, thanks once again for being a part of the Huxley Morton podcast. It's been a real pleasure.
Right. And it's a pleasure, you know, to represent the company, represent Flash Data, because it's not about me, really. It's about the company. It's about the team and about, you know, executing on the mission. That's really what it's about. And it's about the quality of work that we do for our customers. So, you know, in the end, I could be, you know, an interesting guy to talk to. But the most important thing is not how interesting I am, but, well, what kind of quality work the company does for its customers. I think Flash Data is doing good work for the customers. That's really the most important thing for me.
There it is, that golden rule. Danny, look, thanks very much once again. You have an amazing day.
You too, guys. Have a great one.